I am the product. Like I create the pretty stuff, but what I can do now in 15 minutes has taken me 15 years to learn. My character and my name and my moral compass are like, that's what's driving me at this point. Because I can't have a bad reputation.
No, you
I
won't.
can't have colleagues or clients walking away from the table being like, God, man, that really wasn't the best. I don't expect perfection. I demand excellence, which is just your best.
So today we talked to a guy named Christopher Confero, a guy that was born and raised in Jasper, Alabama, but has made his mark all over the world. From his time at Teen Talent, where I found out years later he met my wife, to being an Auburn singer and going to Auburn, and his senior project catapulting him into a business that is known around the world as one of the premier event producers in the absolute world. He also owns a magazine, so you're going to love this conversation with Christopher Confero. Christopher, thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
A lot of people, we met, I don't know how many years ago, but you and I will go 3 or 4 months not say anything because you're off doing things in multiple different countries, and then all of a sudden we'll talk 4 times in a week like we are this week just because of something we have coming up. But I have loved getting to know Christopher over the last 2 or 3 years. Christopher owns a company called Confero, which is his last name, and he's an event producer and does some of the best looking and most, I don't want to say the word high class. I just want to say elegant and fancy is the Southern Alabama word to use for what you do. And so you are very, very good at what you do. Just tell me about you, like growing up, and how do you go to being this event producer now? But tell me what it was like growing up.
The new fancy industry word is high touch.
High touch.
We are high
That's
touch.
right.
Man, I was a church kid. I grew up playing the piano and singing, show choir, theater. I was just always on stage. From going back, I mean, I remember being like 3 and 4 years old at my grandma's church.
And you grew up in Alabama.
Jasper, a
Jasper.
little north of Birmingham,
Walker County.
Walker County. Went to Auburn University, was in the Auburn Singers. I majored in public relations and marketing. So for me, the crossroads of fine arts and a life on stage and public relations and marketing turned into special events, parties. It's just live theater. You can call it whatever you can call it whatever you want. It's costuming, it's staging, it's lighting, it's props, concessions. You know, like it's all the elements of a great stage show or a great movie. I always thought I would go into corporate PR, more of product development through the concept.
Like work for Alabama Power, run their events, run their things. Like you thought that would be what you would do.
And I picked up a freelance graphic design job for Alabama Weddings magazine, right out of college.
Pretty serendipitous.
And that turned into editorial styling, which turned into my friends being like, well, if you do that for this magazine, why can you just do that in for me? And Confero, my senior project coming out of marketing and public relations was Confero. We had to
I did not know that.
create a fake business to brand and develop. And I had a little of the forethought to know, like, well, that's what I would want to do, not realizing it would be the only job I'd really ever would have ever had. So I started doing graphic design and print design for Alabama Weddings in tandem. Had people asking me, well, if you're doing that for the magazine, can you do that for us? And
Who is us?
my, you know, friends, the people you meet those first few years when you're just beating the pavement, friends, family, anybody, that was the answer. Anybody. You shake
If you had
hands.
a dollar, I would take your money.
And it just.
So let me go back to this. This is, I think, fascinating because the shtick now in 2024 is you don't need college. And hey, look, I don't know if my kids will go to college or not. I mean, Tegan's 12. He wants to own 47 businesses when he gets older. Jonna wants to play volleyball in college. So I think she probably will go. Got no clue what the 8-year-old Georgia will want to do. But this is a great example of your senior project morphed into an extremely successful business.
I think I could have gotten all I needed to out of my last year.
I think,
you know, freshman, sophomore year of college is like 13th, 14th grade.
It is.
But the relationships you make when you get into your last few years, whether you're Greek or for me, I was in Auburn Singers. So those relationships are still some of my best friends today that do influence my business life.
Yeah.
I think, you know, trades, call it what you want, trade school, tech, anything, like all of that is relevant. Like I need craftsmen and laborers.
Yeah.
On my side of the world, much less renovating a property or a house.
Right.
So, for me, the education component of my life was really beneficial because it saved me so much money when I first started my business. I could code, not just like WordPress drop and drag. I could code my own website. I could write my own press releases, build my own media kits.
How did you learn how to do that, though?
Style and design, Professor Robert French.
So, so you're telling me a class in college taught you how to do that crap?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's completely irrelevant now, a PR degree from 2007.
But it's morphed.
Yeah.
You just kept up with the time.
Yes, I could constantly surround myself with people younger and smarter than me, as we all should as business owners. But when it was the most useful in the beginning as a one-man band, I could do it all myself.
How old are you?
39.
39 and still just absolutely beautiful.
So
39 years old, if you were to give advice to a 18 or 19 year old right now transitioning out of high school, would you say yes, go to college or don't go to college?
Honestly,
yeah,
I would say not.
Okay.
I believe via internships, it all depends on what vertical and what career path you want.
Lawyers and doctors, we got to go.
You got to go.
No, not those people.
Don't make giving me stitches
no doubt.
With an education off the street.
Yeah.
But aside from, you know, those top tier career paths, I think via internships or trade school, I don't think you would really have to spend that four plus years investing, especially if you don't. I mean, like, I didn't grow up with money.
Yeah.
And coming out of, you know, a 4-year system, it took me how long to pay off that student debt, you know?
Yeah.
If you can map out your roadmap, I don't think it's necessary.
What about the relationships? Because I can't tell you the number of human beings. One of my best friend, his office is down on the first floor.
Yeah.
Without college, I wouldn't have him.
Yeah. And
there's not many. There's a handful like that, but the ones that are through that 4 years are strong.
I was only at Auburn for 2 years.
Okay.
It was a 2-2 split. The music director at the church I grew up in was the president of a community college in North Alabama, and just knew my history. And you know, I thoroughly enjoyed the junior college program before I went to Auburn. In fact, the first job I applied for out of college, not even really diving into the PR marketing vein, was a junior college transfer recruiter program or position for Birmingham Southern. I truly loved it that much.
Right.
I felt like it prepared me, not being an academic. Like I wasn't super book smart. I'm smart, I'm creative.
Yeah, same way.
But I, you know, mathematics and sciences weren't for me. So he, knowing my history and knowing who I am, he pushed me to do the junior college track for 2 years and then transfer to Auburn. But through that, I was always actually bound for Alabama. The music director at my junior college was really tight with the music director at Auburn and just said, hey, I'm sending you one of my kids to audition. And if I had been just a kid off the streets going to audition, it might not have happened that way. So relationships are going to be what you make them, right? I mean, you find your people and hang on.
Yeah. So the crazy thing is you and I knew each other for about 2 years, and then you met Jackie, my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then she started just like, I know this freaking guy. So my wife was truly really, really involved with, is it Teen Talent? No.
Yes.
Teen Talent?
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah.
And so tell me about how that stage of your life, that high schooly being on stage, played into it. Because my wife looks at you and she goes, I know who you are. And like just big hug. And it was just like, you know, old long lost friend. Tell me about that stage and how that created I don't want to say created the person you are, but kind of molded you into what you're doing now. Well, how important was that?
So teen talent is like a talent competition in our church circle, right? Yeah. So, you know, schools have Trumbauer in our high school system, different, but teen talent was in our, for our church.
It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. Cutthroat.
In the church.
In the church world. Amen. But listen, you learn it's those valuable relationships.
Yeah.
And I think competition is healthy.
Absolutely.
Right. I don't need nor want to win them all. Yeah. And I think, as a business owner, or just life in general, man, like prepping yourself for the wins and the losses, at a young age, like everyone laughs now, like, you know, everyone gets the trophy. Mm-hmm. All the kids now like get the trophies. Well, man, when you grow up, not everyone gets the trophies.
No, they don't.
So I value the time that I had in the competitive. I mean, truly, it even went like through to college. We had Jazz Fest and other competitions to where like I'm, you know, I can sing and I'm a decent enough dancer and actor. But was I going to win everything? No. But did I still make those relationships that connected through to the to business life and that I still carry with me like my personal life today?
Right.
I mean, like your wife, sure. Right? How long had it been since?
Oh,
I'd probably
15 years.
Yeah. But you know, but she knew in me what those kids go through.
Yeah.
Right.
She did.
Good or bad. And could connect a rapport with me, through that. So like all of, you know, all of that ties into how I approach, you know, business life today. I don't land every client that I meet with.
Absolutely.
But I think my people, I also don't think, and not a pious way to say it, but like, I don't think I have competition. The people that come to me, I connect with for personality and because we view life the same and our, you know, call it values or style, like all of those things that align, like those people are my people.
Right.
If you want the blush and bashful Southern wedding, that's not me.
That's not who you are.
My clients want a little. They want it to be a little sexy and a little moody.
Who's the blush and who's the blush Southern wedding? Who is that? Who's the best planner to do that?
Locally, or just I get Neely Butler lands it every time, man. I mean, kills it.
She does.
Yeah.
So you like you don't look at Neely and think she's quote unquote competition.
Not at all. Like
they're just totally different clients.
We started at the exact same time. She would call me like, hey, can you come help me poke some flowers? I would call her with questions. We've really come up in this industry together. But our style and our client, just by who we intrinsically, who we are, we are different humans.
She's old school Mountain Brook and you're not.
I'm not.
Jasper.
I'm Jasper. But I'm an actor. I'm a chameleon. Intrinsically, the people we attract... and she is salt of the earth, man. She has been through some shit.
You're good.
Sorry.
You're good.
Her character, man,
she's
strong. She's tight. So she runs a good ship over
there.
She does. I'm happy proud to know her. But we intrinsically attract different people.
Yeah.
Right? So not competition. I think, you know, a rising tide raises all ships.
Yeah.
So if she's doing good work and I'm doing good work, it's just bringing up the level of everyone's work.
Totally. So transitioning out of Auburn,
where did you
go? What did you do?
Came right back to Birmingham. My grandparents were here. I grew up with my grandparents. They had adopted me when I was a kiddo, and I wanted to be near. My grandfather just passed away my senior year. Spring of college. Yeah. So it was still sort of new for my grandmother and just like feeling like I needed to be here for that, for her specifically. And I've always loved Birmingham. It allowed, you know, big fish, small pond.
Mm-hmm.
There is truth to that, of course. So moving back, I knew it would allow me to grow quickly. My contact base was here. And growing up, my mother lived north of Atlanta. So I had developed relationships back and forth. When you look at truly the first 5 to 10 years of my business, it was
back and forth all
the time. So Birmingham was just easier to live.
Yeah.
close to my grandmother. Mm-hmm. A lot of my Auburn, you know, those fresh young relationships, and not making it big on Broadway, man. Like I wasn't gonna, being a kid on of the stage, I didn't have the, I have thick skin. I think being a business owner,
you have to,
but I was not gonna move to New York or Los Angeles and audition and be told no, and audition and be told no, and audition and be told no.
Right.
It would just be too grating for me. I know, know thyself, and I know, I know myself. So moving to Birmingham, I knew I could grow. I could beat the streets, hustle, work. When I first moved back, again, I worked, I started my business, started graphic design, freelancing for the magazine. But when Mandy at Hot House or Prop House Mandy Hot House, I would help
her. Previous episode.
I would help her wash buckets. It was, what are you doing this weekend? We would, you know, come. I would just be on wedding weekends with her. I was doing anything that I could do to grow relationships, meet people, pay rent.
So, okay, so let's go back to that. Let's just talk really cut and dry financial.
Yeah.
So you graduate from Auburn, you got the school debt, you're freelancing for Alabama Weddings Magazine and doing what? When you say health, what are you doing for actual money?
It was anything, really. Yep. I mean, I would freelance, help Mandy when needed. I would be doing the graphic design, picking up parties for myself. Who else did I would Kathy G back in the day when she would do flowers and stuff. I would really, I mean, because I worked in, because of my well-rounded past, in my time in the theater, like if Alex, AG Lighting, I mean, really, I can, with my hands, I can do graphic design. I know flowers. I know lighting. I can do just about everything for my clients, but like cook the food and bake the cake. And I'm not that bad in the kitchen sometimes, you know, but I would do anything and everything that came my way just to, in those first few years, man, you just hustle.
You're just out trying to, you're freelancing everything. Mm-hmm. You're working for Kathy G. You're working for Mandy Majerik. You're working for anybody and then doing the freelance. So you got four or five different freelance jobs going. Everybody's just paying Christopher Confer. You don't have a boss, which is really, really odd at 23 and 24 years
old. I've never had a day job.
That's crazy.
Not like a proverbial day job ever. I've never not been, I mean, when you're freelancing, of course you have your superiors and people you answer to, but I've never once had a office job, day job. It's always been Confero.
Tell me about the progression. So 23, 24 years old, give me 23 through 30. What happens in those pivotal years?
I also, like we talked about relationships. You remember the track. Laura Casey started Southern Weddings Magazine.
Okay.
2008-ish, right around when I started Confero. She had a retreat called Making Things Happen, and the first one was in watercolor. And I went to that retreat and met her. There's one of my dear friends, Emily Lay. She's based in Pensacola, but runs a brand called Simplify that is a global phenomenon. Met some national top tier photography talent.
Why did these people come to this event?
It was just like a new creatives. How can making things happen? Coming together, like think tank, brainstorm. So in that, I met a photographer, Nick Onken, who was releasing his book. And I was like, hey man, I knew he was planning to do an event in New York City. And I was like, if you need someone to produce that party for you. And he was like, well, I can't pay you. And I was like, just get me there.
That's great.
I'll sleep on the sofa.
You get me there, I'll do it for free.
Yep. I wanted to meet people.
I'll be your guy.
Yep. Optics. I'm producing an event in Manhattan. And this was, I was 23, 24.
Man, that's so good.
Throughout college, knowing the corporate event track, I had, done my research and homework and found David Beam, Preston Bailey, Ed Libby, just like the titans of event planning. Some still today, but it was different 15 years ago. And David Beam, I always connected with David Beam's work. So on that trip to New York, when Twitter was only, there was no Instagram, it was just Twitter. I had tweeted at David and I was like, would love to meet. I'm working just down the street from you. And quickly, the girl running his account was like, David said, come on by. And I was like, what?
Are you serious?
Cold call. I had on this scarf that was like the size of a blanket, trying to be just
I'm so New York. I'm so New York. I'm from Jasper, but I'm so New York.
I walk in the door, the first thing he said, he's like, "Hun, take that off." I mean, like, it had to be just massively wrapped around my body. And he's from Virginia. And we sat that first day and talked about him growing up with his grandparents. What's your favorite Southern? I mean, like, there was no, like, I went in, like, trying to network in the events career lane. No. And we just became big buddies real fast.
He just asked questions.
We just talked Southern fella to Southern fella and have been best friends since then. That would have been spring of that year. Engage, the luxury wedding summit that a lot of my peers go to, had just started in 08. And my first, I don't know how I scrimped together the money to pay for it, but I went to Engage in 2009.
So you're still 25 years old.
New David Beam, new Laura Casey. And on night one, I mean, like, I'm an actor, I'm a chameleon. I may be uncomfortable, but I will jump in conversation. I will get in the door.
How important is that? Like, that's not, okay, let me tell you something. I'm only 4 years older than you are, but, and I know I sound like I'm 70 when I was fixing to say this, but kids these days don't do it. And
yeah.
I force Tegan, and you've met Tegan and Jonna both.
Yeah.
I force them to come up and ask and say, "Hey, my name's Tegan. What's your name?"
Yeah. The trope, fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Is real. It's real. It's real. Like, you may not, especially if you're an entrepreneur, you've got to get out. You have to, if you don't, sure. How are you creating relationships? What's your icebreaker? How are you connecting with people? What are you saying? Interpersonal communication, those relationships and those skills are highly valuable. So I walked away. Well, one, I was like the little 24, 25 year old Southern Alabama. Like, people are like, "Who is this kid?
Who is this guy? He's tall."
Yeah. I wore a white, oddly enough, I wore it just last week to an event in DC, but I, again, scrimped and saved. And there was like, it's basically like the Manhattan equivalent to like TJ Maxx, but I bought this white Dolce & Gabbana suit. And I wore it to the closing gala. And I remember Sylvia Weinstock was like, "Son, you just look so handsome." And I was like starstruck that Sylvia knew my name, but I left that. So, and I went like 8 consecutive years after that. And I built relationships from there that still track to my life now because I put myself out there. And listen, it would have had to, I'm trying to remember back to like the tangible pieces, like how did I pay my rent taking freelance jobs? Did I eat that Tuesday or did I take the money and like save it toward my, the cost of going to Engage? When you're starting in business, you're making the tough relationships. David's story is out there from, interviews and talks that he's given. He's producing Michael Douglas's and Catherine Zeta-Jones' wedding, sleeping on a cot in the back of his studio or sleeping on a friend's sofa. So like, if you don't, I mean, listen, man, you got to hustle.
Yeah.
You've got to make the hard decisions, and life isn't, even now, like I just bought my first home last year.
Yeah.
Right. So, making those tough financial decisions, making those relationships, putting yourself out there, like being a business owner is not easy.
No.
Like this is, yeah, definitely should. I mean, I've never had a day job, but would have life been easier if I had a corporate, some like corporate job?
50 grand in 2008, that'd be great. But you've not had time to do all these things.
Correct.
The thing that I think that you did, and I listened to this podcast called My First Million, Sean Purry. He's famous for saying this, get on the plane. He is famous for saying, if you want to, there's something about meeting someone belly to belly.
Yeah.
Get on the plane.
Yeah.
And that's what you did at 23, 24, and 25 years old.
I haven't stopped, man. I'm lucky to get on a plane and go where my clients take me. But success is rented, man. It's not, you don't own it. If we go a year without putting time and the work in, the ball stops rolling. Like in motion stays in motion. You have to consistently work at it. There's no relying on your laurels. And when you think you've made it, bro, you're already so behind.
Sure.
So I'm still going to the conferences and I'm still getting out and meeting people and I'm still trying to hustle and shake hands. I'm just very thankful that now that I'm, 15 years into it, I happen to be top of mind when some people think about like a really good party.
Okay. So the journey from meeting all these people in 23, 24, 25 years old, David Beam, Mark Casey, all these just titans of this industry, you start doing your own producing. You start producing these events.
Yes.
How does a event producer make money?
Man, it's all in our brains, right? Like there's no tactile. I am the product. Like I create the pretty stuff.
Yeah.
But what I can do now in 15 minutes has taken me 15 years to learn.
Sure.
So at the top of your career, when you're charging like $2,000 to work with someone for a year and a half to produce their party, assessing a value to that time. And I really think, no matter how green you are in the beginning, if someone had come to me with $500,000, it might have taken me a little longer to figure out where to put it. But coming from my background, like I could have figured it out, but those clients don't fall in your lap.
No.
Year one, year two, year five, six, seven.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes 5 to 10 years of really working your rear end off to have the portfolio and the respect, just the respect on your name. I mean, it takes your character. It takes that long for those clients to come to you and trust you with those big spins. And the larger the party, the more you charge, right? I mean, I have birthday parties that I take on locally for friends now that, I invoice differently than I do a massive production. The black and white of it, my fee structure is, 15, 18, or 20% of the overall spend, depending on if it's local, abroad, or holiday. My holidays are valuable.
Absolutely.
It's time there was a stretch of like 5 years where on New Year's Eve, I was producing weddings every year, not with my friends, or Memorial Day when my friends are all on vacation together and I'm producing a wedding. It takes a while to really like stick to your guns about that kind of stuff. But if that's a piece of advice I can give, like hotels, to go stay at the Four Seasons is more expensive on a holiday weekend.
Absolutely.
I am more expensive on a holiday weekend. Time is the most valuable thing we possess as humans, full stop. My opinion.
So when you say 15, 18, 20%, let's just take, for example, Susie's wedding or Susie's party or whatever the case may be. Good round numbers. Let's say it's $100,000. $100,000 budget.
Yep.
And it's on a Thursday night, middle of the week, and it's local.
Yeah.
So you're going to charge her 15% of that $100,000. So if it's a $100,000 spend, they're going to pay you $15,000.
Yes.
Okay. Do you charge anything else on that? Do you have a retainer on top of that? Some people do.
Depending on corporate, the time you spend on a social party, a corporate party, and a wedding after you've been in the business for 10 years, those time investments are different. Yeah. Weddings are always your largest investment on time. Just the dynamic, the client, the bride, mother, all the different people involved need different things than a corporate job. It's just, point of contact, deliverable, execute,
correct,
paycheck. Weddings have a retainer and you say retainer instead of non-refundable deposit. Retainer deposit implies that you can get it back. So for me in the verbiage for a business owner, a non-refundable retainer, not deposit.
That's good.
Yep. There's a retainer, the percentage, and then depending on how much we produce, there's a percentage of like a production fee. That 15% is for what's in here.
Sure.
Right? That gets my ideas and me to the table. And then there's all the stuff, right? So when the clients hire me, I produce all the pretty stuff. It's florals, linens, lightings, rentals, all the tactile, tangible things you see when you go to a party. And some planners, designers, producers structure it differently. But for me, like I bring together my production teams. My client doesn't meet a floral designer, or I'm not dragging her
to caterer.
Sometimes they, I mean, like you're, you know, typically, no, they'll meet you on the, you know, the day of.
Unless I've not met.
Unless we do a tasting.
I've not met anybody. I don't think I've met any of your people.
Yeah.
When I've done stuff with you.
When a client brings me on, I know based on their budget, their style and their expectations, who they're going to align with, where, who on my team is going to deliver for them in the way in which I expect the standards to be produced. Holiday, local, abroad, like there are different pieces of the puzzle, but I'm coming away with my retainer, percentage, and like there's the production fee based on the overall scope of job. I have friends who have an event management, a small piece of the pie. They'll tack on a couple thousand bucks for event management, which covers their like day of labor. My projects tend to be of the scale that I feel my staff should be covered under my fee, but not all people have
gotcha.
As large of a piece of the financial puzzle as I do being brought on. And then sometimes it's just knowing where your limits are. Like, you know, when a client's writing me a check for 50 grand, like, should I also invoice them another 500 bucks for the interns for that I'm hiring? No, it just seems like it seems grabby. Even with like gratuity on, this is over the past few years, this has changed. I had one client say like it for us, it's more of a headache. Cause I would tell the dad, like I need 10 envelopes, 500 bucks. And I would go just gratuities. And he was like, build that in. He's like, it's more of a pain in my ass to go to the bank, get the money, even as like kind as that is. And so now I tell my photographers up front, like, you know, whatever your, like, and I will tell them based on the scope of contract, it's 400 bucks. Build that in.
$400 on the invoice.
And I will tell them, and I'll tell my clients, like, your gratuity's in there. Like, we're not just, you know, buffing the bill to like bulk up the bottom line.
Gotcha.
But for some reason that like handing someone a 20, handing someone a 100, like that endorphins of like.
It does. It feels good.
It feels good.
I mean, we'll do a $50,000 job.
Yeah.
And they won't tip you. And you're just like, well, they just gave us 50 grand. It's okay.
Yeah. But I do.
It's not okay though for my team because like they love the extra 40.
Correct.
The 60, the extra whatever.
That's food on the way home and some gas, all that kind of stuff. So like if I give it to the captain or to the owner, I say like there are 40 20s in there. Spread them out.
Right. Where did you learn this? Where did you learn that model of charging and how to charge people for what you're worth?
It'll blow your mind. Like I've always been percentage. It started at 10 when I first started because my weddings, you know, at that point I'd be lucky if they were, you know, 50,000 bucks, 30,000 bucks, 50,000 bucks. So like I'd always had a 5,000, I was always going to be 5 grand.
Okay.
That was my retainer. And now that was like that first contract. And I feel like, people who are investing a lot of money now, they expect to wheel and deal a little bit. So like, you know, I will buff my contract up knowing that whether it's the dad, their attorney, their financial manager, they're going to come back with like some tweaks. But in the beginning, I've always been percentage. Mm-hmm. Most people still have, there's a lot of people, a lot of planners that have, well, my fee is 7,500 bucks. And if you're working on a wedding, that's $400,000, because the larger the budget, the larger the wedding, the more time, the more labor. And especially if then they are hiring on team members that comes out of their revenue. Well, like if you do the math, man, I'm making like, I actually did, there was one client who was him and hawing over my, how much I cost my investment. And I like broke down the math. These, for a wedding of this size, these are the hours that I usually put in. Here are my hard costs. You're paying me like $23 an hour. Get out of town.
Yeah.
Like if you want to buy, like maybe I'm not the best fit. If you really want, if you're trying to drive that value,
I'm not your guy.
Call somebody down the road, man. And respectfully so, but like working with someone for 12 to 18 months, it's hundreds of hours.
Well, and here's the thing too. Our job, is to make people's lives easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's our job.
Yep.
Whether, and here's, it sounds really silly. Whether you work at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Or whether you are planning a $1 million event in Manhattan. Or whether I'm doing a $100,000 meal for whoever. My job is to make your life easier. In everything that we're doing, that is our job. And to take the stress off of planning an event. An event.
I'm the liaison between them and everybody. So that's why I don't drag them to, we're going to go meet with four florists today, or yeah. I'm taking you to the rental company, or we're going to look at this all day. I bring that to them. The day I do my design deck pitch, it's like show and tell. We have our digital boards, and then I'll bring in the tactile stuff. Here are your textiles. Here are the hard goods. Here's a floral mock-up. Why would I waste their time?
That's what they're paying you for.
That's what they're paying me for. I'm the concierge to bring all that stuff to them. Again, for me, time is the most valuable thing we possess as humans.
What is the hardest part about what you do?
Ooh, managing the people. Oh, yeah, sure. That can be, and that's, listen, that can be clients. Hell, that can be myself, right? It's managing human nature with anybody. I'm a good leader. I can be a great cheerleader on site. I can go in and keep morale going. Especially installing a party, I know what I expect when I am watching the room being built. Mm-hmm. I will get on the ladders. You've seen me.
I've seen you sweat your face off.
Yeah. I will. I still work. I am not. That's why I'm
never seen anything like it.
I don't call myself a wedding planner. I produce. I, with my hands, produce. I will hit 15 miles hiking, or like, you know, burning steps on a wedding day or party day. So dealing with the personalities of 50 to 100 people being on site, installing a party. Like, not everyone's having a good day. So you got to account for that.
So-and-so's late.
So-and-so's late. Or what if I've had calls the night before the wedding. Can you get hit? Like, can you talk to the groom? We've gotten in a fight. Or the mom is squabbling at
your marriage counselor.
Yeah. Oh, man. Firefighter, banker, mediator, scapegoat, therapist. I have many hats that I wear aside. And that's all of us. I mean, like, sure. You know, it can be any job. You're dealing with money when you're putting families together, dealing with so much money, dealing with so many personalities, managing the people. Cause I wasn't a psychology major. I'm not an HR. My job is in the creative. So like, even when it comes to managing personalities, I have this merry cast of characters in my head that I can ebb and flow with. But when I have to like get myself together to sit down and like, I will step out of the room. I've been with brides and moms fussing, and I'm like, I don't care who I'm working for. Y'all make a decision. I'm gonna slip out and let y'all talk. Y'all just let me know who's the boss. Mm-hmm. Now, mom, remember, this was her wedding. I know you didn't get to live your dream wedding 20 years ago.
Right.
And then I'll step out and I come in. It's always a little bit of a reality check for mom. I should come back. Oh, we know that's our daughter's wedding.
But I'm paying for it.
But I'm paying, yeah. That's what she says. That's the phone call I get the next day.
Absolutely.
But it's the people. I can listen a month outside of any party, everything should be buttoned up. Your orders are placed. Menus are fixed. Mm-hmm. You have to account for weather and some variables, but the dealing with the people never stops. Like, you're dealing with that. I do a monthly check-in call with my clients. The software that I use gives everybody tasks list, gives everybody calendars. It's called Aisle Planner.
Aisle Planner, okay.
Some people build it out themselves on Google Docs. I love, again, the visual in me. I love the visual interface that it gives. Everything's prettier, flows better in my brain than just a Word doc or an Excel spreadsheet. All does the same stuff, but for me, it's just prettier. So I give, dealing with the people, you know, it's the hardest part, but again, circling back to what we were talking about earlier, you meet people where they are.
Yeah.
How do they communicate? How do they speak? Do they send a lot of emojis when they email you? What's their body language? So like, yeah, the people are the hardest, but I feel like once you learn them, and again, our people are coming to us for a reason. We vibe the same. Typically my clients, it's an older professional who doesn't want to talk to me every day. Or some wedding planners are getting just like blown up all the time. What do you think about this? Or here's a text, or here's a DM, or here's
Pinterest.
Like, my girls are like, you good? You need me? All right, back to practicing law, or back to doing this, or I've been shuffling kids around.
Right.
So the hardest part is the people, and then the best part's the people.
That's it.
You know, like, I don't want to be cheesy, but like, it's exponential.
Yeah.
Referrals. Once you, again, I, there's a lot of, I don't remember, I think it was something I'd posted online, but there's a lot of things I've gotten wrong in business and life the past 15 years. But in the past five or so, I've really come to the mind that like my character and my name and my moral compass are like, that's what's driving me at this point.
Yeah.
Because I can't have a bad reputation.
No.
I can't have colleagues or clients walking away from the table being like, God, man, that really wasn't the best. Well, then they're not going to tell their coworkers or their, it's all, relationships are exponential.
And when people ask about an event or ask about something, you want your name to be on the top of their mind.
Yeah. I got a text yesterday from someone like I never thought, I mean, like, they're local, but they work globally. Mm. Hey, we're getting ready to celebrate this person's 40th. This other person said, I had to know you. Can you come by the house? And I was like, oh, that's pretty awesome. Cool. Yeah, awesome. I'd love to.
Yeah.
But I had left their friend's party on, I mean, screaming high note. You were there. You'll hear about this one coming up.
Gotcha.
So just doing right by people. Working the relationships in the best way possible and being authentic. Like, right. There's a topical way to like shake a hand and smile and be nice, but like being nice and being kind are two different things. I tell people like on a job site, I'm kind. I'm not nice.
Yeah.
We're going to be a matter of fact.
Straightforward.
I'm very straightforward. You've been there. Yeah. Like I will
don't do this. Take this off.
Yep.
I've heard it.
Yep.
And you can't take offense to things like that. When someone's in charge, and you have to know who's in charge. And when someone's in charge just tells you, take this off, they don't have time to give you the paragraph, like in an email. You get an email, it's fluff, and then you're going to tell them what they want, it's this big, and they give the rest of the fluff.
Yeah.
In an event, when bullets are flying and you're sweating,
you
just need the meat.
Yeah.
Hey, take this off.
And those are the people I'm coming back to.
Yeah.
I will cycle back with relationships, and they're like, well, I wish you could have said it this way. And I'm like, in that context, when you're hearing me yell in the room, I'm not actually yelling at you. I'm yelling into the room everyone can hear
everybody.
I'm sorry you felt that way.
Yeah.
You're not coming back.
So let me ask this. So you're progressing through your 20s. You started to really gain some traction in your 30s.
Yep.
Tell me, what was your big break that helped you progress in the industry?
You know, it actually was pretty early on.
Mm-hmm.
You build up the size of events over those first, 10-ish years. But at the very start of my career, Heidi Elnora had just come off Project Runway.
Okay.
And was like nationally known, picking up lots of buzz. And she asked me to plan and produce her wedding. And that was like year three. It was still, I mean.
So you're 25 or 26.
Yep. And listen, she's from Corner. I mean, like she's North Alabama local girl. And that same was kind of David Bean. That's where we connected, just good old Southern
folks. How did you meet her? Through David?
No, because she was here. It was just, we were starting business at the same time. She didn't do all the bridal shows in the beginning. Her photographer, Angela Karen, back in the day, just the general networking, the business networking earlier on. And I'm
so
sure
she
someone was like,
man, that's awesome.
And it became, was published. That was kind of where the Atlanta leg came from. Even though I didn't work there, she was working to like open a store there and some of the publications picked her up. And I capitalized on all that I could. That wedding being seen. It's no different than like how I referenced David Beam doing Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones wedding. Living, sleeping on a cot in the back of his shop. That was his big break.
That was his thing.
In a Manhattan market. For me in Birmingham, or in the Southeast, between Birmingham and Atlanta, Heidi was my Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Mm.
She had so much buzz then. I remember we ran like a 4-page story on it in the magazine. Truly every publication in Birmingham picked it up in some form or fashion. And that was that kind of first big break that I capitalized on, and then going to Engage, working those relationships. So there really wasn't, for me, it wasn't the difference in like the decade of 20s to 30s. it was the snowball effect of putting in those, that first 5 to 7 years of just like dog hard work.
But the event for Heidi is like,
was
like the
tipping
point.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like that first I'm here,
but you had to put in the 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, man,
to earn that.
And I still reference, I'll get on a ladder or I'll do the flowers now. But those first few years, man, I would start on Wednesday.
Oh yeah.
And I maybe would sleep 4 hours a night. And typically from like Friday to Saturday, there would be no sleep because I would be doing, I would do the linens. I'm doing all of the flowers. I'm up and down. I used to, you know, I referenced Alex. I had a Ford Explorer that would perfectly fit an 8-foot leak open or a pole and base in the back. And I would like pick up all the lighting equipment.
Wow.
Rig it up on site. I was really doing it all.
Doing it
in
all.
In the beginning. Putting in that much work and just knowing your craft, being able to speak. Because there are other, some wedding planners, if like a little boutonniere broke, they'd be like, how do you fix it? You call the florist.
The flower person.
No, you grab a flower out of the back of one of the centerpieces and just retie it. I can do the flowers. I can hang the lighting. I can design your stationery. I try to be educated. Not I try, I am. Educated enough in all of the verticals to be effective, to know my craft, to know what I'm speaking toward. Right. I mean, like I meet people now, and when it's the first time I'm working with them, I'm like, I'm not just a planner who's going to come in and just kind of merrily we roll along. I'm kind. I'm not nice. I'm persnickety to work with. You've been on site. I demand excellence. I don't expect perfection. I demand excellence, which is just your best, your
and
absolute
effort,
best.
Effort. I think you demand extremely high effort and I think the biggest thing you look at is you want the high effort.
Yep.
What I think you do a great job at, okay? On site, you do a great job at course correcting.
Thank you.
Wonderful job at course correcting. Yep. Where I have a vision of this,
you
will course correct this and say, no, let's do it this way.
Yeah.
I'm like, great. But you can't let... When you work for Christopher, you can't let your ego get involved because ultimately you're the head coach.
Well, I know.
It always goes back to sports for me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're the head coach
and
you have to tell everybody else what to do.
I'm the one who's been with a client for the year.
Absolutely. I don't know Brooke.
Yeah. They may not want that garnish on the plate because they've shown me plating from a restaurant in Malibu that they loved that, whatever. Well, some, you know, whether it's a garnish or attire. I mean, you know, like I'm big on being buttoned up. There's no sloppy presentation that I know what the clients expect. And especially since I'm that concierge between my client and all the other creatives I bring on board, you know, I'm the connecting point. Like I'm not sending you onto the floor to talk to the client. You know, they're calling me like, can you fix this? And then I'm like rushing back to course correct.
Yeah.
And it's always a good thing. Like it's the ego thing. It's always, if it can be met without ego and without hurt in those moments, like I'm not trying to hurt feelings.
No,
I'm not trying to
trying to make it right.
I'm not trying to diminish anyone's art or whatever. It's just for the good of the team.
Yeah.
Right. It's just let's get across the finish line.
That's right. Tell me about buying Alabama Weddings.
Okay.
Because that's odd. And it was really serendipitous. We talked about the beginning of you coming out, even in college and coming out of college, you were writing for Alabama Weddings magazine. So you just bought this magazine. Tell me about that journey.
It was always, Michelle was the former owner. Through my earlier tenure there, it was always our kind of goal. It was always the long-term goal for me to be the next one.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'd hit my stride with Confero, and I knew I at that time thought tremendous growth could not be based locally. And I think before COVID, it wouldn't have been as easy now, right? You can work for a company in Seattle and live in Birmingham.
Yeah.
No different than clients being in Seattle and hiring me living in Birmingham.
Yeah.
But thinking that I needed to be out of Alabama to really exponentially grow the planning and production business, I'd lived in New York for 2012 for a year working with David Beam on like a year contract, filling in some gaps for him. And I didn't love it as much as I thought I would. What I love about Manhattan and the energy and the excitement, man, working there is grating. It is hard. So I thought Atlanta would be like that perfect Southern sensibility, yeah, larger metro market. For me, Atlanta never felt like home. Had some just like adult, personal, familial things that were really turning upside down through those years of my life. And in that spring of COVID, I guess early summer, the opportunity just presented itself in conversation. In a very elementary way, if you want it, it's yours. Make me an offer.
Wow.
She had been doing, it was approaching 20 years. She was 20 years in it. And the magazine, most national publications or even regional, like they're not producing all of their own content. They'll get submissions. They have national teams. But every page you see, aside from the section of Real Weddings, we produce every concept, produce every single piece of content. So it's a lot.
Are all the weddings in there yours?
No. There was a big difference of going in like this not being, some people ask me, are you going to like rebrand the magazine? I was like, no. It's not Confaro Weddings. Because I'm, you know, intrinsically, Confaro is not very Alabama, Southern, relatable. Right. And I wanted Alabama Weddings to be, we got the deal done. That was summer of 2020. I knew that if I was going to take the helm, it had to have a full rebrand.
Yeah.
Like it was just dated.
Right.
My senior editor, art director, David Kirk, who is on staff now, he worked with me 6 of my 8 or 9 years before I'd moved to Atlanta.
Okay.
And he had moved to New York to do his thing, spread his wings. And I immediately hung up the phone with Michelle, picked up the phone with David, not knowing COVID was literally like
right around the corner.
And he had just been in New York long enough. He needed something, a change. And I was like, I physically can't do it without you. You know it. I was like, can I bring you back for a year? Mm. Can I bring you back for a short run to help me like rebrand? You know the system.
Yeah.
Let's get it done. He agreed. And for him, it was a great move. You know, New York, those like inner city pieces were not the move during COVID. And in 3 months, we rebranded, rescoped. I mean, really, what typically is the full calendar year, we rebranded, did all of the production, all of the content building, printed. Like, we did the entire process in about 4.5-5 months.
God.
We shaved about half the time off. And it was my best year in sales. Well, weddings weren't going on, and it allowed me to like be fully invested
in it.
If I could just do Alabama weddings, I could scale it.
Could you?
For sure.
Super personal question. Is there enough money
in
order to not do events?
Absolutely. Especially life, what most people think of as a great salary,
sure,
owning a business, revenue, for sure.
Why don't you do it?
Confaro is my baby.
Yeah, sure.
It's what travel.
You enjoy it.
I travel the world.
You do.
I have great clients. It affords me, it allows me to live the life I want to live. Alabama Weddings is Alabama based. It's not that I live here. Mm. I have my Southern sensibility, my Southern values. That Southern charm is all real, but I could not be tethered completely to the magazine and be a happy human.
All right, excuse me. How many days a year are you away from Birmingham?
It was a fluke. In March, I'm not traveling at all.
And I took,
No. I had a huge project fall on my lap the first week of April. And not traveling in March was the only way I was able to take it. And I am so thankful that it happened because it is already exponentially business coming up.
I remember you talking about that, yeah.
Starting in April, I'm gone every weekend between April and May. Wow. I was home maybe like 8 days in February. One of my greatest clients now is as a travel company, and they're remote everywhere they produce. So luckily for me, like, I'm getting to travel the world and experience things. But then also carve out the time in production season, to effectively manage the magazine. Like, it's, listen, it's not easy.
No.
I was already not great at, I don't even say work-life balance. I say work-life integration. At some point,
I hate the word balance.
There's not. You're never balanced.
You're going in one way, and going in the other way.
There's never. No. It's integration. It's how you gonna make it work. Because there's always a tip. This year, at the top of this year, I had a full teams. We had like a 2-day intensive retreat with both my Confero team and the magazine team. And it was basically like, we're either going to like what we do, love what we do, effectively structure our time, or we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to like it and be good at it, or it's not worth doing. I'm not going to half do it.
Yeah.
And I think that I have everyone in their lane. I produced the largest event earlier this year that I'd ever produced to date. It was a full week-long conference. Few hundred people, but it was just a week long.
Something every day.
Several things every day.
Wow.
And the team I had on site, I mean, my production packet was like 86 pages. I mean, I left no crumbs on the table. I left there on the highest high. My team, my clients were in tears. My team, like, we were all like, couldn't have done better. And I left that party so empowered. Even I vocalized here, like, I'm a great leader, but I'm not a great boss. And they were like, you're like joking on yourself, man.
Right.
Like, they were like, we've never, and a couple of them are actually business owners that were on my team. And they said, you've literally like laid us a blueprint of how I want to be a better boss. And I was like, what?
That's great.
So managing the integration of the Confero and Alabama Weddings, this is year 4. My plan was only 5 years. Like,
and then what?
I don't know. Listen, it doesn't live and die by my hands. But it is so relational. I was able to so immediately take it from Michelle because I knew all the advertisers.
Mm.
I knew the mom and pop shops. I knew all the local properties.
Gotcha.
On some hands, like, people wanted to know me or work with me.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit of a leg into it. Well, let's partner with all the magazine and see if we can work together on Confero. Like, it's a weird amalgamation of the business worlds that sometimes is hard to keep the black and white line between. It's not a Confero magazine. If you advertise, you're not just going to get, I'm not going to hire you for a party.
Yeah.
Like, those things don't run in tandem. But at this point, just in career and life, if I don't enjoy it, and truly, if it's not making me money, I'm not going to do it.
No.
Like, there's no more ego. I want a fat savings account. I want my 401k. I want my investments.
All that.
Dude, I want to be out. 60 or whatever. Like, I want to be out.
So transitioning from there, you're 39. What's the plan? What's the 5-year plan? What does it look like in 5 years? It's going to change, but what does it look like in 5 years?
It's so nice to have clients who are actually like working so far out. Like, I'm working on things for 26. I'm with certain clients. I can't imagine, and I certainly hope, and I will not back down on my like work ethic to where anything on the Confero side changes. I just want to keep scaling up.
Sure.
Where it used to be 8 to 10 weddings a year, I have 2 on the books this year because of the corporate client. I mean, like, my corporate book is massive right now. And it's seemingly like other social parties, whether it's, birthday party for the text I got yesterday. I did a few like just anniversary family events.
Family things.
Which are meaningful, build relationships, put money in the bank. I'm still good at weddings. For some reason, like, life is just like it's pivoted away from weddings a little bit, and I still take them when they come. But I've had several inquiries, and I'm like, you sound amazing. I'm already booked for that date.
Tell me about this. So we talked about this off camera one time. You've got you work for a travel company, and you plan the events. But give me like the 90-second version of like how that works with working with them.
They call me their design partner, which is great because I don't have to get into the weeds of planning through a Birmingham-based relationship that I have nurtured for 15 years. She went to work, which was that business was in the travel industry. So I understood that market, what they needed. She went to, took a new career, a new job role with this company. And when she went on board, like, she's like, I have, you know, if you're open to talking to him, I have someone vetted, trusted, who's done all of this for me for almost 15 years. And it was just a great fit. Like, I'm not, I have my team members who do the getting, who get in the weeds of planning. Cause again, I'm in the design world. Everything happened on time and when it needed, but the structure of it with my clients in the first 10 years, they knew it was going to happen. If it was super structured along the way, iffy. So working with this client now, I design, they plan, and they, which is where you want to get as a creative, like they implicitly trust me.
And you go to all the events. Help get you, in essence, set them up, and then somebody else plans the events.
Correct.
You love that as much as anything.
That's what I love the most.
You'd rather do that than do the strategic planning, quote unquote planning, correct?
100%. Even when it gets into the planning now for other clients, like I have Carmen and Dana who do the planning pieces. I can do it, but I'm not great at it. So know yourself, know your strengths, know your weaknesses, surround yourself with people who are doing it better than you are. Creative, man, I can go in, I can walk in a room 10 minutes, close my eyes, see the room exactly how it's going to be finished, and even like move stuff around. No, that's not there. Let's try that there. And I know what it's going to look like.
Right.
Me keeping up a spreadsheet for the transportation schedule,
Gotcha.
Not my strong suit. So working with the clients who have those planners in place, who know their internal structure and schedules and stuff, a dream.
If there was a 23-year-old person out there, guy or girl, that wanted to intern with you, do you do anything like that?
I sure don't.
Why not? Because I have an answer to that too.
Yeah. I would rather, for some, especially being like on job site, now that I have the magazine, I might be able to take like someone being on set for like a photo shoot or learning. Someone being on a all guns blazing job site, I don't have the time. I don't have the where, I just don't. And then I barely have enough time during the week to do. I mean, I leave before my grandfather, I leave before the sun rises and I come home when the sun sets.
Dark,
I leave at 9, I come home at 9. Like, I just don't have the time. I am open to where if someone was, like, really, I felt like I connected with them. They understood me, like, how David Beam was to me. Wonderfully open, mentor. I feel like if something presented itself in that way, and listen, I do have 100% have so many younger creatives in the market that I have. I say all this, and I don't call it an internship or whatever, but, like, I will send you my contract. I will tell you I'm an open book, but it has to be like someone that I feel like I believe in their creative ability.
You're not going to send someone you meet off the street, but if you get to know someone, you'll share.
I need to believe what I imagine David Beam saw and felt in me. It has to be that with some with other people, and I really do. I have those people that are my friends now, and I'm the first person they call for like career advice or creative advice. Even in the internal like planners with all of my colleagues, I'm an open book, man. I will send you my contract. I'll talk about my business plans. Anything that can help people, again, the rising tide raises all ships. If you're only charging $5,000 to plan a $500,000 wedding, if a cheap dad's just trying to save money, they're going to pay for it at the end.
Let's walk through this and talk about why you need to do better than this.
Right. So if I can get everyone on the same page, because again, it's unregulated. Our industry, there's no barrier to entry. So fellow planners, up and coming, I don't have time to baby someone on a job site, but if I connect with the person and I believe in their ability, I'm definitely open to like creating friendships and mentoring in a
way.
Yeah.
Okay. If you lost everything today, you had no money.
Yep.
and all you had was your knowledge and your relationships, what would you do?
I think about this often, but in the context of like, what am I going to do next? You know, if I like really got tired of this in 2 years and I was like, oh my God, I'm not doing anything. So I have to start all over. I feel like if I was going to make it big on stage, I would have done it 20 years ago.
Okay.
A PR degree, like I referenced, is kind of worthless now. It would be some sort of, I don't know, the nonprofit world is so hard. It would have to be something in a creative field. I truly wrestle with this question because I have colleagues who have been in it for 20 plus years, and they are in it for 20 years because they started in their 30s or 40s. I started out of the gate. So I've been in it 15 years and I'm not even 40 yet. So they're trying to retire at 65, 70. And I've almost been in it as long as they have. And I'm only 39. So like, I think about what's next or what would I do if it all came tumbling down on me? Something performance-based, you know?
You know what I think you'd be good at?
Tell me.
Giving you unsolicited advice.
Tell me.
So everybody that I know that owns a salon,
okay,
hires a consultant, and the consultant catapults their earnings.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sandrettos, Salon 43-1, overall 119.
Yep.
They're wonderful. They do really, really well.
Yep.
But they catapulted when they hired somebody to help them understand. Julie, a friend of mine in Cookeville, Tennessee, she owns a salon called Omayet Salon. It's wonderful. Her and her husband, Eric, run that. And they took off when they hired a consultant. I think that you in that world, you would slay that.
Yeah.
Retainer-based.
Yep.
Having a small number of extremely high paying clients you could lean on, and they could lean on you for help. So like, say you had 5 or 10 clients, and if you had, and we know her and love her, but just say a person like Neely that didn't have Neely's knowledge, that she could bring you in and give you help, you help give the creative vision. I think that's a world that you would kill it
in. Noted, check. There's a little bit of alignment there. When a new advertiser comes on board, I say, how do I fill in your marketing gaps? Yes, I can sell you an ad, but if you have crappy media, you have an ugly venue, like I can sell you an advertisement, but it's not going to work if you don't have all the other stuff. So I'll go do a site visit and I will ask them like, do you want me to tell you, like, do you want me to be real and tell you what I would fix? Whether it's, I mean, topical stuff, paint colors or flow or
the windows suck,
anything service. I mean, like anything about the process. So like I do, like my brain does work like that. When I do site visits to hotels, I will email the like GM or whoever I've made a relationship with. Like there was a hole in the duvet, the air vents need cleaning. Like, cause most people don't pay attention to those things. But if you want to be a high touch professional, I could see that career for me.
I think that's something you could do.
Thank you. Next life.
What questions do you have for me?
Ooh.
Uh-oh. It's got it written down.
Show do. And they're good ones, too.
Good questions.
All right. Question for you. If your least favorite client could change anything about the process of working with you, what would it have been?
I would want them to be more succinct on what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two things out there
that
we do a really, really good job. Just using Table and Time as an example. We're really, really good at you giving me a good vision and saying, this is what I want. Like, you do a very good job at that. We failed miserably at that earlier in the week of like you saying this and we
this ain't it, bro. We will be there by 2 o'clock
today. We will be. So, but having someone give me a vision, we're really good at executing that vision.
Yeah.
Or having someone say, I don't really know, and we're really good at that.
Yeah.
I want a client to either give me the exact vision or let us have it.
Yeah.
And then tweak from there.
Not hee-haw in the middle.
But the hee-haw in the middle is very difficult. I want this. They say I want this, but then you give them that. Mm-hmm. And they go, ah, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I don't want that. Like, we're good at both of those avenues. Mm-hmm. I think anybody struggles when people vassal back and forth.
Communication.
Absolutely.
Clear, concise communication. Yep. And as a business owner, knowing how to articulate questions to dial in, because if they can't really describe what they want, like my job is to ask the right questions. If someone's not in the creative field, or the bride, you know, when I say, well, who's your favorite fashion designer? Well, I just shop at J. Crew.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask more questions to dial in on what style do they love? So whether it's men, food, flower, whatever the medium is, communication, clear, concise communication, asking the right questions to get the right answers.
I ask a question a lot of times. Who's your favorite follower on Instagram? Who, when you see their post come up, do you get excited about?
Ooh, bro. There's Bureau Batak. They produce every fashion show, like every top fashion house fashion show.
Yeah.
I could design an entire party. I could just set a party.
Yeah.
In their space. It never misses. That's wonderful. I mean, the most, not to give my secrets away, but like, it is the most consistent inspiration I can.
Spell it.
Ooh. All right. Bureau Batak. B U R E A U B E T A K.
Wow.
A journey into
B U R E A U B E T A K.
That's it.
Holy moly.
A journey into design and production for our projects. So you'll see, like, they do, it's probably 90% fashion shows. But like Dior would hire them to do like a dinner after the fashion show.
Wow. Where are they located? New York?
I would imagine Manhattan based.
Wow. I'll look them up.
They don't say, yeah, it's wild. I mean, it's more inspiration than I could ever garner, but architecture, fashion,
all of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Next question. So I just finished reading a book called A Simple Path to Wealth.
Okay.
The author J.L. Collins refers to FU money.
Mm.
He does mean it in the proverbial sense, but he also means the F to stand for freedom. Mm,
I agree.
I personally feel that time is the most valuable currency we possess as humans. So with all of your businesses and time you spend investing in so many things, what does wealth and freedom look like to you? Because it's not always money. It's not always cash and stuff. What does wealth and freedom look like to you?
I think that the wealth part is it's a competition. There's a competitive nature inside of me that I like to produce.
Yeah.
So I like to produce the dollars.
Yep.
But I also like to produce the thing. Mm. I think I like the business part of what we do more than anything, whether it's Weddings Costa Rica, Table and Time, Meal Fit, Walcox, whatever. I think that the business structure of everything is what I really, really enjoy. So are you asking like what is my number, or what does it mean to me? So the thing that I love is I love being able to, at this point, go home at 3 or 4 o'clock.
Mm, that's it. That's what I'm asking.
And not have to do anything.
Yeah.
So like last night, I spent a little time last night working on something. I don't do that much.
Yeah.
I don't do that much. Now, I also spend time on Saturday and Sunday doing things, but I love to do it.
Yeah.
So I don't have hobbies. I don't play golf. I exercise. I work. And I spend time with my family.
Yeah.
That's really about it.
Yeah.
So freedom for me and freedom for Johnny is different.
Correct.
So I don't mind. Like, I'm sitting at a volleyball game. I have a 2-hour gap. I pull out my computer. I'm reading or I'm doing something. And somebody comes up and makes a snide comment like, oh, work's never done. I'm like, I like it.
Yeah.
I don't rip on you because you're out playing golf for 3 hours. I like sitting down for 30 minutes and getting something done.
Yeah.
I like the production of things.
Same.
The thing that I'm working on right now is I'm trying not to do items that are not what they call impact items.
Okay.
I want to do things that produce impact or produce revenue. And it's very, very difficult. But here's the thing. As you see, I'm a list checker.
Yep.
And I like to check things off the list. And sometimes I will put things on the list just simply to check them off. And I have to get out of that.
Yeah.
I've got an amazing team led by Sierra that I need to let Sierra do her job.
Sure.
There are things on here that Sierra could do. Mm. There are things on there that Tanya could do. We hired a VA in Bosnia and she's wonderful.
Fabulous.
She's wonderful. And so I need to let them do those things.
Yeah.
and me do the things that I can do. Because there's some of the things that I can do that Sierra can't do. That's not how she's made. That's not the relationship she has. Those are things that I have to do. Now, I'm bringing her along on some of those journeys
to learn, because
I want her to learn those things. Yeah. So when we're brokering a $15 million real estate deal in Colorado, that she understands the language.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's my answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cooking a meal and breaking bread with others is one of the most meaningful things to do in life. Because I know you mostly through Table and Time.
Right.
Right. What is the ethos of Table and Time, and what's your approach to sharing a meal?
So from Mountain Brook to Montgomery to Mumbai, India, everyone sits around a table.
Yep.
And so the original name was Table. And we just couldn't figure it out.
Okay.
From a design standpoint, from the way it came off your tongue to all those things. Sitting around a table is where life is done. I go back to my days in Cookeville, where we had an extremely tight group of people, and all our kids were around the same age, and we would exercise 2 or 3 days a week together. And then at the end of that, we would all cook and sit around and eat. Those are some of the best times.
Yeah.
Because you build relationships there, and everyone's got to do it. Not everybody exercises. Not everybody owns a business. Not everybody has kids. But everybody eats.
They're spending time around the table.
They're spending time around the table.
Yeah.
So that's where the name came from. And so from my Table and Time's perspective, I want to give you that time and take that stress away of you having to do that. So that's where we come in and make, again, I keep going back to make your life easier.
Yeah. For 95% of our working relationship, I don't micromanage.
No.
I give you the brief. You give me a menu.
We tweak it.
Minimal changes.
Yeah.
But I put you in your lane and let you shine.
Mm-hmm.
On the fly stuff on the job is just a part of it.
Yeah.
But I come to you for those reasons.
Right.
Like you... and I sell it to the client as like, you're not like Chris Hastings. Mm-hmm. You're not you're not like chef.
No.
This, but I sell you as that like personable, relational, it's all meaningful, and you can get in and work a room and be confident. Like most chefs come out and they're 10, whatever. Like I want people who like, when I do introduce you,
yeah,
I pull you into the room for you to like meet the people and like work the room.
Sure.
Right. So I appreciate that about,
yeah. And I love doing that.
Yeah.
I think that's one of my skill sets.
Yeah. Like, oh, it for sure is.
Walking into a room, being able to talk to the person writing the check and then the 17-year-old boy that's in high school.
Yeah.
Like, I love being able to do that.
Yep.
So,
last question that I think is very important for anybody in what we do. What is your definition of service versus hospitality? What is the difference? What's your definition? The difference in service and hospitality?
Service is giving someone what they pay for. It's service. I'm serving you.
Yep.
You pay for a meal, I give you the meal. Hospitality is an elevated version of service, in my opinion. But hospitality goes beyond the meal. It's what is there. Hospitality is I am taking care of. I think it comes from the
care.
Word of,
yep.
From hospital. So I'm taking care of Christopher. I'm taking care of Susie. I am taking care of the extra things. So this is a silly, small example. We asked this lady, we did an event. We asked this lady if she wanted coffee. She said, no, she didn't want coffee. Well, there's a 79-year-old lady there who can barely walk around who comes up to me because she knew I was in charge. And she goes, sweetie, do you have any coffee? And I go, yes, ma'am, I do. Give me just a second. So I got in my car.
Absolutely.
I went to Jack's. It was the closest place I could find. And I got about 4 cups of coffee. And I went back and I said, here you go. She goes, honey, where did you go to get this? I said, ma'am, I went down the road and got this for you. She said, she said, oh my gosh, you didn't have to do that. I said, I know I didn't.
I know it
but
didn't.
I wanted to.
Yep.
So taking care of people,
yep.
Beyond their expectations.
Mm-hmm.
That I think that is hospitality. I can't remember the guy's name's Will. I can't pronounce his last name. He wrote a book, Unreasonable Hospitality. It's got a yellow
cover. It's on my list coming up to
It's wonderful. Next plane ride you're on, you got to read it.
Yep.
It's wonderful.
Okay.
He does a very good job, and he does a good job because he kind of marries the two industries that we have. He's mostly food, but he is a lot in like just, again, hospitality and taking care of somebody.
Yeah.
So I want to take care of him.
Service is just getting it done.
Getting it done.
Hospitality is relationships.
That's right.
It's putting the personal touch on it.
Good.
Service is, hospitality is not required. You don't have to be nice. You didn't have to go to Jack's.
Right.
But you wanted to.
I wanted to. I did.
And I'm the same way. I would have literally walked down the street, got my car, done the same
thing. Got a coffee. So, hey, this has been wonderful.
Thank you.
You did a great job.
Thank you for having me.
I think that anyone in this industry, you're one to follow. I love talking about you to friends and other people.
Thank you.
If someone wants to get in touch with you, whether it be about Alabama Weddings Magazine or Confero or anything, anyone wants just to touch base with you, what's the best place for them to do that?
I think it's Instagram, man. Yeah. I mean, you can see what we post. Alabama Weddings couldn't be any more simple on that side. And then Christopher Confero. It's a good mix of my personal life, my business life, what I enjoy doing. And I think people seeing all of that leads them to the conclusion of like, do I want to know him?
Yeah, sure.
Would we get along? I want to work with him. So you can find me there.
Perfect. Yep. Thank you so much.
Thank you, bud.